Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks.
As we all know, each and every person in the fight against alcohol use disorder has their own reason for recovery. Maybe it's your partner, your sister, your just family member, maybe for your podcast co-host. But I mean, as we all know, the most important relationship is with yourself, right?
Absolutely.
So you have to get sober for yourself first and foremost. But we mentioned the other people just to remind you that we're all in this together. It's the power of we.
Yes, we don't do this alone.
Here on Recovery Rocks, our mission includes smashing stigma and establishing community.
Absolutely.
For that reason, we've partnered with the awesome folks at SoberLink in order to expand and strengthen our community even further.
SoberLink is a remote alcohol monitoring technology created to help provide accountability for people in recovery. It includes a high-tech breathalyzer device with facial recognition that allows you to share your sobriety in real time with loved ones who can offer support in the event of a slip or a relapse.
SoberLink has helped hundreds and thousands of people document their proof of sobriety, which is, you know, really accountability, which is something that we talk about a lot on this podcast, is the importance of accountability. So if you're interested in learning more about SoberLink, check out the link in our show notes and
get inspired and inspire others today by joining the community. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Recovery Rocks. It's Lisa, and Tawny is still on her book hiatus. She is finishing dry humping, and we're very excited about that. And she'll be back soon. But today, I'm very fortunate to have with us our good friend, Karolina Żadkowska. She is the author of the book Euphoric, and you may know her from Instagram at EuphoricAF. Karolina is, as I mentioned, the author of the book. Euphoric is called the subtitle, Ditch Alcohol and Gain a Happier, More Confident You. And Karolina is a recovery coach. And Karolina, I've known, she lives in San Diego. We were fortunate enough to connect when I moved out here. And like many of us, Karolina found herself at a place in life where she was stuck in an unfulfilling career. She was not feeling great about herself and where she was at. And she was drinking to kind of mask the issues on the weekends. And decided to take a break from alcohol that she'll tell us about. And it led her to this whole new life, which is wonderful, and which she now shares with others. And want to talk a little bit about what people can get from taking a break and really finding some purpose. I think it's, you know, we as we've talked about recently on the podcast, sometimes we stop drinking and then there's sort of a what now kind of thing. And finding purpose, whatever it is something that for me has given life a kind of meaning that I never could have anticipated or expected. So welcome, Karolina.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for the warm welcome. I'm super excited to be here today.
Great, great. Why don't you let everybody know a little bit about yourself and your story?
Absolutely. And I think you share some key things in that introduction about really the, when you look at hindsight, it's kind of like the clues were always there, but it's hard to see them in the moment. And so I was someone who really overdrank when I was in college and grad school. I formed a quite unhealthy relationship with alcohol, but it was so wrapped into that party lifestyle, that freedom. I was carefree, just doing whatever. And as I got older, I started to slowly get insecure about it. And I'm like, okay, I need to make sense of this alcohol thing in my life. So I think I'm clever and basically push all my drinking into the weekend. And so I live this Monday through Thursday, this very healthy lifestyle on paper. I go to yoga classes, I drink my green juice, I meditate. And then every weekend I overdrink. It's sushi night, dinner night, wedding, you know, game night, what Netflix and wine, you name it, right? And Monday morning, I just wake up feeling so horrible. Not only horrible because obviously physically alcohol does not serve a human body, but also because I felt like I just bulldozed all that healthy progress I made over the week. And like I was just waking up feeling so low and so stuck and just like, why does this keep happening to me? Somehow there's something wrong with me. Because all I kept seeing was these shiny images of everyone doing very similar things, right? Like, who can't wait for the weekend to let loose. And yet I didn't really think that they were having the same effects. So it was as if somehow my body, my brain was reacting to alcohol differently. Obviously, now that we know more about the science of alcohol, that couldn't be further from the truth. And so for me, I had a real aversion to making any changes, I think, because of this like black and white thinking that I had back then, that either you are normal, responsible, right? You know, like perfectly fine with your relationship with alcohol, or you are the problem, right? And it was with the pride I had, with the kind of just independent nature I had such a problem literally saying I had a problem. And so I kept myself stuck even longer because of that. But I had a huge mindset shift when I heard about Dry January, because it was the first time I felt like I actually had just permission to explore taking a break, or, you know, like changing my relationship with alcohol without announcing it to the world, without having to explain it to people, with really just that permission. I think permission is a really important word, because I think most people don't give themselves that permission. And it's something that is not really a normal thing to reevaluate in your life, you know, until you just can't not reevaluate it. Or luckily, you know, with the alcohol-free movement now, maybe you've found some literature earlier, but like for us growing up, Lisa, like that didn't exist. Like, you know, it was just, there's no consciousness around it, no awareness around it. It was just drink to be part of society. This is what you do, and rinse and repeat. And you're the one who somehow can't manage it if it's not working. And so that break from alcohol I took in Dry January really opened my eyes. It wasn't easy per se, but something I was so ready for at that point, because I was so sick of the shame, the regret, the crumbling self-esteem I used to live in. You know, every single time, every single week, there was a rule. No drinks on Thursday, no more than 2 drinks on this day. You know, don't drink that beer, I'll give you a headache. Just all the rules, right? And so I just felt like I couldn't trust myself, you know, and it was so hard because everything else seemed to be perfectly great in my life, or at least perfectly good enough. And so it's like I could trust myself with all these other areas, but this was like the blaring way I couldn't trust myself, which then impacted all those other areas too anyway. But, you know, when I was really ready for that break from alcohol, I was like, let's do this. Let's just do the full 31 days. And I allowed myself truly to fall in love with the experience. I fell in love with how much energy I felt during the day, how much better my sleep was. But really what the kicker was that feeling of pride and self-love every single morning, that past version of me decided to look out for and care for the future version of me. And when February comes around, I still have this really big belief that normal adults drink. Therefore, if I want to be normal, I must drink. And so I go back to drinking a few times socially in February, and the contrast, you know, even just a few drinks, I noticed my mood. I would get frustrated easily. I got cranky, exhausted. My sleep sucked. And I kind of needed that contrast to really affirm, wow, I really don't enjoy drinking and I'm ready to take another break. I did at that point in February, and I basically haven't drank since. And ever since then, literally my life has exploded in the best possible way. And I think something that you mentioned earlier is so key, because what I really didn't recognize that I was doing with this weekend thing was like, I couldn't wait to get through my week. I couldn't wait for Friday. I couldn't wait for life to speed up faster than it was so that I could unwind on the weekend. And I think in our culture, that's really normal, you know, like TGIF, and we all don't really enjoy our jobs, so let's just get to the good part. And I didn't really have the awareness back then that the reason why I felt that way is because I wasn't getting any fulfillment through the week. I wasn't fulfilled with my career. And so my two predominant emotions at the time were boredom and stress. So stress because obviously I was juggling a lot in the job and all this stuff, but also boredom because I wasn't actually finding any meaning or fulfillment with it, right? And to me, alcohol was just the answer to both of those, you know? And so that's why not only have I, obviously, do I love helping women ditch alcohol, but I really love helping women find greater purpose in their lives, which often comes from our zone of genius married with making a difference in the world.
I love everything you said about that. And so much of what you mentioned, I think, is so true for so many of us. The idea of, I mean, when you said that it was really just waiting for the weekend and waiting, you know, not feeling anything. I remember when people would ask me, you know, so are you happy? And I would be like, I don't know what happy is. My life was something I got through until I could get to the weekend. And it doesn't have to be that way, but I had no awareness of that. And I mean, you were, you're much younger than I am. And so you were doing this at a young age where, you know, everybody is still, you know, on showing what they imagine to be their best life on Instagram and all of that with the drinking. And how did that, was that a hard thing? Were you surrounded by people who were still in that mode and then having to kind of switch gears to get out? How did that work? I know a lot of our listeners struggle with, am I going to lose my friends? Am I going to, you know, not have people to hang out with?
Absolutely. So, you know, I love human needs because I think our human needs are never wrong, but we often meet them in very unhealthy ways. And the one model that I really like says one of our human needs is significance. And it's our need to feel important, like we matter, like, you know, we're important, that we have recognition in our lives. Oftentimes people get significance from their careers. But I remember getting significance from alcohol, right? Because not only like how you mentioned the like Instagram kind of highlight reel, I remember thinking that, you know, if only I could make my relationship with alcohol shiny, look shiny, right? Then everything would be better. And so I remember planning trips to the wineries in Mexico. Oh, look, not only how sophisticated I am, but look also how adventurous I am crossing the border, you know, and that's how I would like show up. And I really was like just looking in all the wrong places to like fill those deeper human needs. And, you know, when I changed my relationship with alcohol, it was interesting because, yes, obviously, like my friends, my husband, all those people were still the same people that they were before. But I remember just having this, like, I just want to be honest here. I just want to call out this elephant in the room. Am I really the only one who hates how she feels after drinking? And so I remember when I started sharing stuff like that with both my partner and my friends, they kind of opened up too. And they're like, yeah, you know, I really don't like that either. And one of my friends said, you know what? Yeah, I actually have felt pressured to drink ever since I was little. And I don't really like it. You know, like you're giving me like some strength to actually give myself permission to maybe say no more often than I want to. And so I think it actually was brought some of us closer together because we were finally able to talk about something that was so taboo, right? And some people got really inspired and decided to take some breaks as well or drink less. And others, you know, got inspired by other things I was doing because in that 1 year, that first year, I did so much. I launched my business. I started writing my book, the first draft. I eventually quit my day job. I ran a half marathon that year. So all they could see was these positive just identity changes I was having. And I think that inspired some of them too. Now, I know that I'm lucky in that regard because like I think my friends and I were on a kind of similar wavelength. But I've also worked with so many clients where really the only thing they have in common with that friend is drinking. And sometimes it is a hard relationship to save and may not be worth saving because like there literally isn't anything else bonding you together except for something that really is bringing you guys down. And, you know, I really believe in that idea that like the people we surround us ourselves either bring us up or like lower our kind of our vibe and our energy. And so I don't think you should ditch your friends, but I think you should make room to attract incredible women into your life that are inspiring you, that are people that you aspire to become as well. So, you know, I was around 30 years old, but, you know, I think that I turned something that used to be something I thought was embarrassing or something that I thought would, you know, label me as having a problem and all those kinds of things. And I turned it around really quickly to find an identity in rebellion, right? And this identity of I'm a rebel, you know, the alcohol industry wants us to drink. They want us to believe we have to have it for all these reasons. I'm the rebel who's shunning that. And there was even a part of me that would, you know, bring alcohol-free beers or different mocktails to parties. And I was like, I hope someone asks me about this because this is so cool, you know? So I think, but, you know, I struggled to find that new shift of paradigm for years before. But then once I was ready, I just kind of switched how I saw it and really embodied a more confident identity as a non-drinker.
I think that is so spot on and so wonderful. Because I know there was my experience with coming to that realization is slightly different. I was very afraid of, you know, nobody's, you know, I had the normal kind of nobody's going to want to hang out with me. I'm going to have to lose my friends, all of that stuff. And I found, I remember being in the detox and, you know, for anybody who knows my story, I was in really a rough detox, a rough psych hospital. And I, at some point, I remember I was standing in line with the other patients waiting to get my meds in the line. And I was like, I'm standing in a meds line in a psych hospital, but I'm doing this to get better. And I think that's kind of badass. And I just decided like, yeah, like in a Keith Richards kind of way, I'm going to own this like that, you know. And I found the same thing when I got out and, you know, back into the mix with my friends. There were my true friends, who I write about in my book, who are still my, you know, friends today, my close friends today. But then there were these other people where I used to always stop off at this bar across the street from my apartment. And, you know, they were people I would just drink and do drugs with. But I never, you know, one day when I checked into detox, I stopped showing up there and I never heard from a single one of them again. Right. And I always joke about, like, I wonder if 3 months later, you know, people were like, hey, I wonder whatever happened to that chick, Lisa. Like, for all they knew, I was dead. And, you know, there's also in betweens on that scale, but your true friends are with you. Your drinking buddies were never your true friends. And I think what you talk about in finding support and like-minded people and community, Tawny and I always talk about how important it is to have community around us. And you are, you know, the idea of having, you know, had this revelation through doing a dry January and changing things like that is incredible. And, you know, not through a 12-step program. How did you build your community and how do you help other people build community and find those connections? Because I think that is a really big challenge for so many people trying to get sober.
Absolutely. And I remember like the excitement I got out of it, like, you know, because at first it was just this mindset, you know, we all have that mindset and hopefully our kids don't grow up with it, but it's like, it's going to be a sacrifice. It's going to be deprivation. I'm not going to be able to hang. I'm going to be the boring one. I'm not going to be fun. Right. So we're all like up against that mindset. And all of a sudden I was breaking all of that apart. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love this. I'm feeling happier. I have so much like pride and love every single day. The nature is amazing. The hikes are so much better. You know what I mean? I was really falling in love with it. And I wanted to share that excitement with someone. I remember that's the feeling it was. And obviously people in my life, while maybe supportive or understanding, like they weren't quite exactly where I was. And so that I know I was hungry to meet other women going through the same thing. And so I got a little industrious and I remember just looking up meetup.com to see if like maybe there's like sober events. And I remember 1 month looking and there was like not really anything. And then the next month, all of a sudden there was this group. And I went to it. It was supposed to be like a brunch. And so I went to this alcohol-free meetup and I ended up meeting, which is now one of my best friends in life. Her name's Danielle. And she organized it basically because she found the same thing. She was like having all these revelations and epiphanies and she wanted to share it with other women. And she didn't see anything available. So she started her own kind of community. And I'm sure that took a lot of, you know, nerves and all that stuff, but ultimately was so exciting. And so, you know, today, like now that I kind of can see the overview and meet with women all over, like I always think meetup's the first great place to start because you never know that in your community, there could be all these kinds of social events, right? Because I think what we're looking for is more social versus like therapeutic. So just checking it out, seeing if there's any sober, alcohol-free recovery, anything along those terms, just seeing if there's anything on meetup.com. And then if you're in the big cities, you know, like there are mocktail events. I just met Tawny at a mocktail event in New York City at Sands Bar. Those are all over the nation, you know, at different times. There's pop-up events, there's sober raves, there's, and I think even if you're not finding something that's specifically alcohol-free, what I suggest to someone is, you know, when you go into the things that really grow you, that you're really passionate about, say maybe it's personal development or spirituality or yoga or running. Now, I'm not saying that there's never drinkers in those groups. Obviously, there are. But when you go into a community and find more groups and conferences and things like that, where really people are putting their passion first, I start to see that drinking becomes a little bit more irrelevant in groups like that, right? People sometimes are non-drinkers, and that's a really great place to find them in, like I said, personal development, spirituality, could be athleticism, things like that, success mindset. Those are really great places. But even if there are drinkers, it's not the number one thing in their life the way it is for, you know, some other people. So I just say, get creative, keep searching. And, you know, I know it takes a lot of balls really to go to your first event. It's terrifying, right? When you don't know anyone and you're just, you know, and that's why, you know, Lisa spoke at a really amazing event that my friends and I hosted in San Diego called Mind Bar. We were doing before the pandemic. And that was nerve-wracking because nobody knew each other and we all came together and we all had this beautiful experience, I believe, because small talk really isn't the name of the game when you're talking with women who've had the same experience with you, you know, like it's people are ready to go deep. They're not hiding. And it's a really, really beautiful type of connection. So I think that there's so much going on out there and it takes some creativity to like search for it and find it, you know, but there's definitely social things happening for sure. And so since then, you know, for me now, the qualifier for a good friend isn't necessarily that she's alcohol free or not, but she needs to have growth as a number one kind of priority in her life. I mean, maybe not number one, but, you know, it has to be part of her life where, you know, whether it's through business or through some kind of passion or some kind of project that she really is finding passion outside of, you know, giving in her zone of genius versus that number one kind of highlight of her life being the bar, if that makes sense.
That makes sense because it's finding like-minded people who are whatever it is that they want to do or are trying to do or whatever, you know, it doesn't revolve around the bar. And it's also about moving forward, right? Not living in the past, not doing, you know, those kinds of things. But what are you, you know, kind of what, well, going back to the idea of purpose, right? And finding purpose. I know you work with clients to help them find their purpose in it as they live their alcohol-free life. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that, about how you work with your clients that way?
Absolutely. And so, you know, one of the first things that happen when you ditch alcohol and you're not drinking anymore is all those emotions are coming up, all those emotions that were suppressed earlier. And our emotions, whether they're negative or positive, are always teachers. You know, they're always showing us what we want more of in our life or what we want less of in our life. And sometimes when we're dealing with a lot of negative emotions, those emotions are definitely showing us what we don't want with our lives, right? And so let's say a woman is in a position where she's finding a lot of negative emotions around her job. She feels resentful about it. She feels stressed about it. She feels like she goes above and beyond and never gets recognition. She feels a little bored with it. It's not really her passion. You know, all these emotions are not comfortable. And, you know, to kind of feel them and realize you might not be in your thing can be a little scary as well. But I think those emotions are trying to show you. So, for example, let's say someone hates commuting and they hate having a boss and they hate being on a 9-to-5 schedule. Well, you know, maybe one of that person's deeper values could be freedom, right? And the negative emotions are showing that when they're not in freedom, when they're really feeling controlled by external circumstances, they don't like that feeling. So sometimes even our negative emotions are pointing to what our true values are, right? So for me, a freedom of mine is definitely one of the biggest values I have. And so I was never made to be in that kind of like corporate 9-to-5 having a boss mix. I was made to have my own business and be able to travel and just do what I want with it. Now, someone else's value could be something like cooperation or collaboration, and they could completely thrive in a more team environment in a corporate structure. So I'm not saying one is wrong or the other is right. It's just really recognizing that your emotions are teaching you what your top values are. So I kind of start there is finding out what someone might not like, because usually what you don't like is pointing exactly to what you do want, and really ascertaining what their values are. And now a lot of times there's things that we do want and we know we want them in our lives. Let's say like, I want to be an author or I want to launch a business, but we don't yet think that we're worthy enough to actually claim it. We don't actually think that it's possible for us, so we don't actually claim it. And so I do some discovery work with my clients to really find out what are they most passionate about. What do they want their legacy to be? What do they really want to give back to the world? And one of the clues I use as well is jealousy. So jealousy is often not a very comfortable emotion. It's definitely kind of a negative one that triggers us. But jealousy is often pointing to what we wish we want or had in our lives, but aren't yet courageous enough to go after it. So we get jealous because that's the only way we can kind of process that feeling. And so, you know, if someone's not really sure what they want, we can often use that as a barometer of like, well, who are you jealous of? You know, like if you're looking at either your network or even beyond public figures, celebrities, whatever, who are you jealous of? And instead of having that mentality of like, oh, it must be nice or they're so lucky, really recognizing that everyone started at square zero for the most part, especially any self-made person. And it's just a matter of taking one baby step after another consistently, and that's where you get to your bigger dreams. So I always had this goal and dream of mine to become an author. For example, I wanted to be an author ever since I was a little girl. I would write short stories and poems and journal a lot. And it's so uncanny, Lisa, because when I started drinking, my writing completely dried up. I lost the craft. I would just not be able to write at all, just the worst writer's block. I stopped journaling. I stopped really connecting with myself in that way. And I never lost the desire to be a writer, even when I was drinking. So I would make these New Year's resolutions that were like, okay, this is the year you write 1 hour a week. And I would do it like the first week of January, and that's it. You know, it would just never happen. And I remember as I went alcohol free, all of a sudden I'm journaling a lot. And all of a sudden I noticed that. I'm like, wow, I'm journaling a lot. I wasn't ever journaling when I was drinking. And so I start to believe like, maybe I can write. Maybe I can write. And I start just writing more and more, even just, it's not this huge thing. I wrote my book literally in 15-minute increments a day. You know, it doesn't have to be this crazy, you give up your whole life and move to a cabin and be, you know, never leave the cabin because you're writing all the time. Little baby steps add up over time consistently. So I think when you change your identity with alcohol, you know, your brain is kind of confused. Your brain went from thinking you're a drinker to a non-drinker, and all the identity shifts that have to happen within that is huge for a person, right? And I think it's actually this incredible time where the brain is so confused already that we can change so many other identities or beliefs about what we think is possible for our life. So for example, if you never thought of yourself as a morning person, you know, well, who decided that? The teenage version of you, the drinking version of you, that might not be true anymore now as a non-drinker. And like, you know, testing the limits on that and really exploring it and seeing, hey, maybe I might love waking up in the mornings and doing a morning routine can be really fun. But the same way that I challenge this idea like, well, I could never be a writer because I can't write, or I could never launch a business because I don't have the confidence. You know, I challenge those beliefs because my brain was already confused to begin with. And so it was a really cool time to kind of break past anything I thought was a limitation in my life.
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating, that kind of breaking through. And I know a lot of, you know, even for somebody, and I think a lot of our listeners are in a position where it would be great to be able to write a book or start a business or do these kinds of things, but they've got different obligations and they've got to stay in a certain kind of job because they need the income, all of that. They don't have the same amount of flexibility, but they can bring in, you know, which is sort of how I started doing my book, and my stuff was just in that little, I found something that, you know, I ended up loving getting up in the morning and writing, which is how I wrote my book, was before I went to work for 10 years. You know, I would get up and write at 5 a.m. And, you know, even if that hadn't led to, because, you know, me ending up publishing the book or me ending up with, you know, eventually leaving the law firm that I worked at, it still would have meant so much and changed my life in so many ways to just get up and write the and do the writing, because that was cathartic. That was taking time towards something that made me feel good, made me, you know, helped me along in my journey. And I think, I know with me, with AA, it's very much one day at a time, but my one day was always better because I was doing that. And I think kind of those, Tawny and I talk a lot about finding hobbies, you know, the importance of finding hobbies and things that you like to do that are not all about all the obligations we have to other people and to, you know, financial commitments and all of that. But, you know, I think there's so much, it's the mental break of getting out of the rut you're in. And it's also the reward and feeling, you know, whether or not the book had gotten published, I was proud of it, you know, and, you know, incorporating, sort of thinking about what would really make me happy, or what would, you know, what is something I've been afraid to try? What is something I thought I couldn't do that maybe I can? And just start moving in that direction. You hear a lot about, you know, people who say, I never thought I could run a marathon, but so I started running a half a mile. And then, you know, and there may be plenty of people who never got to the end of that marathon, but they, you know, gain so much, and we all gain so much if you enjoy it, doing it, and getting that kind of experience. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And, you know, like, I was working full time when I started my book and started launching my business. So it was these, just like you, waking up in the morning with these little increments. And I remember how much passion I was getting from that. Not only just that I'm doing my zone of genius, but there's something so cool about being a beginner, I think. Like, once you get past all the doubts and the worries about, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, people are going to think I'm blah, 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 because I just don't know what I'm doing. There's something exciting about being a beginner, because there's like really nowhere to go but up. You know what
right,
I mean? So it's like
right,
you're
right,
learning
right.
everything, and you're just really indulging whatever hobby or whatever pursuit you do. But I remember too, when I was a drinker, I used to think this belief that there was no money in writing books, you know? And whether that's true or not, I was so stuck there because I wouldn't even take the 15 minutes to wake up to just try to write. I was just so stuck with that idea. And the thing was that's so silly is that back then I had a full-time job. So I didn't need a book to make money, right? But I was already cutting myself off from the possibilities of, oh, this will never work out. Or, you know, my passion could never, you know, provide for me. Well, if you don't even start on your passion, of course it never will, right? We have to take these baby steps and just do them very consistently. And you have no idea, you know, one day, literally, it could turn into something you never imagined, just like it did for you, just like it did for me. And
exactly.
I think what's so important is that, you know, we go through things. I don't know if it's for a reason. I mean, like, I'm not some kind of, you know, divine being to be able to say that, but we go through things, hard, hard things. And we learn so much in the process. We learn so much about ourselves. We learn so much about, you know, what it takes to overcome a challenge. We philosophize, we get through. And I remember the loneliness. I remember the isolation I felt. It was so strong when I was going through this experience by myself. And today, you know, I'm so fueled by literally knowing that I'm turning around and helping the woman behind me who doesn't have the tools or doesn't have the wisdom that I've been able to glean. And I think if we can think of most of our life experiences in that way, that, you know, I've had women that I've worked with that have gone through cancer, that have gone through grief of losing their spouse, who have gone through losing a child, who've gone through dealing with a partner with mental, you know, a mental illness or a disease that happened later in life. There's so many hard things, litigious battles, you know, so many crazy things we go through. But I have also seen how women take that and alchemize it and start teaching and sharing with other women how to manage and how to get through and how to overcome a challenge like that. And it could be formally, right? It could be formally in the shape of a business where you're a coach or a teacher or some kind of thing, or it could be completely informally, just in your network, just being that person who's a mentor available to other women going through it. And I think that's the beauty of really finding that deeper purpose, because I think the missing piece often that we feel is that we want our lives to matter, right? We want to feel that meaning. And we feel that when we know that our life contributes to someone else's, when we're making a difference in the world. And I don't think it's as simple as just donating a few hours at a soup kitchen. I think we need to feel that our skills matter, that we're actually making sustainable difference or intimate difference in someone's life. And I can tell you the very first time that a woman told me that I changed her life, or I helped her through something incredibly hard. I mean, it was like everything was worth it. You know, just that one life that you can touch. That
Absolutely.
One person.
That's 100% true. And it is, you know, in 12 step, it's the idea of service, right? Like from day one that you get into 12 step, it's like, okay, you're the newcomer. Can you make the coffee? Can you stack the chairs? I remember my sponsor saying very early to me, whenever you're asked to do service, the answer is yes. And I didn't really understand why that was until you start doing something. And it could be, you know, something as small as making the coffee and somebody saying thanks and that I needed that cup of coffee today. And it makes a difference. But it is yeah, just there is, it's a way to connect. It's a way to not feel lonely. And really, you know, being able to help the next person makes so much that you wouldn't think, would have been something that would be meaningful for you. So meaningful. You know, it really is. It's a great thing. Okay. You know, we are on Recovery Rocks, Carolina, as you know, so we must talk music. Tell us a little bit about either a soundtrack to your recovery or what you're listening to now or what inspires you, anything music related.
Yeah. So I have this really poignant memory. I think I'm around, I don't know, maybe 4 to 6 weeks alcohol free at that point. And there's this song that comes out around that same time by Portugal the Man called Live in the Moment. And the song has these chorus lines. I don't even know them exactly, but it's something about Sunday morning, right? Sunday morning, live in the moment. And I was like, it just clicked in me. Like, there is this magical world that exists on Sunday morning that was completely lost to me when I was drinking, right? This magical world of truly living in the moment. And I felt like that song was just placed in my life for such a reason to really, you know, I was kind of sharing about it. Like, I had to experience a break from alcohol and experience the blessings and the benefits to get high off of this life and to keep going. And so that song just really solidified for me, like, the purpose of life is to be fully awake. The purpose of life is to be fully alive. You know, we're supposed to live in the moment. And I don't mean trash the moment. I don't mean numb the moment. I mean live in the moment, right? Because we get sometimes so confused with lyrics like that by pop culture that live in the moment means let's go order some drinks. Like, no, it's the opposite. It's like truly appreciating every single divine moment that unfolds in front of you. And especially that lyric about Sunday morning, I was just like, there's a secret world of people who leverage and who appreciate and who find the magic of these Saturday, Sunday mornings. And I was like, and that's what I want to be with. That's who I want to be with. And, you know, I often ask my clients to find a public figure or a celebrity that they admire that doesn't drink. And I do this because, you know, I want them to start thinking of non-drinkers as winners, of people who are, you know, living this incredible life because of it. You know, from people like Tony Robbins, Brené Brown, Gabby Bernstein, Deepak Chopra, there's so many incredible, inspirational people on this planet who don't drink. And I think to me, it was this mindset shift to like, wow, you found the secret, Carolina. This isn't the life of, you know, deprivation or a can't have or something. This is a life you get to have, and you get to find kind of the secret to these magical moments because you've tapped into it. And again, back to that rebellion, that kind of fueled my pride and my streak of just like hell yesness even more, to really think that there's this like secret club that obviously is available to anyone, but is really, really, I think just marks a sign of intuition, a sign of intuition that you are going to listen to your soul and your heart instead of, you know, your poor coping mechanisms or your desires to fit in or all the other kind of parts of ourselves that are still there, but just not taking center stage anymore.
I love all of that so much. And I will add to it and say, I found, and listeners of this podcast know this, but very early on in my recovery, Anthony Kiedis of the Red Hot Chili Peppers came out with his memoir, Scar Tissue, which was just a great memoir for me, a really, like, you know, and I was like, he became, you know, like my sober sort of idol there. And I would say when I was struggling, I'm like, man, if Anthony Kiedis can do this, I can do this. And it's kind of badass. And then also the second point about the Sunday morning stuff. It's so funny that you mentioned that because one of my songs that I would put in there, I don't know if you know, it is No Doubt Sunday Morning. And it's the same thing. It's like, it's about a Sunday morning where like the ex or whatever comes rolling in like a mess and you know, she's just like, no thanks, you know, I'm good, right? And that is something that I think, you know, it's very powerful. It's like all these new worlds that, you know, we never knew existed until just we started, like you said, piece by piece, bite by bite, kind of, you know, chasing what we want. So thank you, Carolina. This has been wonderful. Really appreciate you coming on the show. And why don't you tell everyone where they can find you? It'll also be in the show notes. But where can our listeners find you?
Absolutely. So if you're interested in my book, Euphoric, please feel free to just Google the term euphoric in Amazon. It's also available at www.euphoricbook.com and in many different nations across the world. And if you're interested in either learning more about me, my programs, I host retreats, all the fun stuff, I got a podcast, just go to euphoricaf.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Carolina, and I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, Sobriety Party, sobrietyeaparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.